Everyone agrees, bacon makes everything better. Even marketing. This is the Bacon Podcast, where you'll learn to cure your marketing.
And make your business sizzle. Can't believe I said that.
Internet marketing, online marketing, social media tips and techniques. Now, to help you bring more bacon home, the master of marketing sizzle, Brian Basilico. This is the Bacon Podcast.
Welcome, everybody. I'm your host, Brian Basilico, and this is the podcast where you learn to make your business sizzle online. So are you ready to fry up some new business?
Hey, peeps, I am uber excited. Today we are going to be talking with somebody who helps coach startup CEOs. Now, her name is Eleanor Haglund, and she's with a company called Aspire 360. So, Eleanor, how are you doing today?
I'm great. Thanks for having me, Brian.
Awesome. Well, I hope that you're having a great day, a great week. And usually what I like to do is get my audience to get to know you and your backstory a little better. And so my question for you is, how did you get your mom to pay you to cook dinners and why? Two, how do you go from that to cooking up ideas for startup CEOs?
Sure, absolutely. What you're referring to is my first job, really, that I had ever. And I had been on a trip to Kenya and had become really close friends with a boy there who was trying to get his education. He was in high school, but really couldn't pay for it. And so I had asked my mom if I could get a job, and she had said I was a bit too young to get a job at that point, that it wasn't actually legal in some ways for many people to employ me. And so she offered to pay me to cook dinner every night. And so that would serve the dual purpose of teaching me how to cook and also providing me some of the income that I needed in order to pay for my friend's education. And that was the end result. At the end of the summer, I had enough to pay for his high school education, which is just not even comparable in terms of cost to the kind of the cost of education in the U.S. Hmm. But it was a really incredible experience, and I'm forever grateful for my mom for giving me that opportunity.
I'm just curious, how much did you end up raising?
I think it was about $1,500 over the course of that summer.
Wow. Well, it's still a good chunk of change. It's a lot of cooking.
It was a lot of cooking.
And I'm sure it taught you a lot of different things. I mean, mm-hmm. how to follow recipes and, you know.
How to plan.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, good education. So how do you translate that into working with CEOs?
Yeah. I mean, I think that there's a part of that which is kind of your community will look out for you. And so in certain ways, I was looking out for my friend, and my mom was looking out for me. And when members of my family and members of my community learned what I was doing, they chipped in and helped put together some more of the funds to make sure that he could go to high school. So I think reliance on community was something that I learned there, and then also brought into Aspire 360. Kind of a lot of my friends who have built startups have asked questions like, how did you do this? Or how did you do that? And mainly it was by asking people making people aware of a problem and then asking them for some sort of support or to join in a cause.
So with these CEOs, first and foremost, I mean, how did you decide to go into this kind of business?
Yeah.
Obviously, it was kind of like people kept asking questions and you dove into it and you said, I could make money doing this. But the second question that kind of builds on that is, how are they finding you, and what kind of, you know, what were some of the things that you saw at first that said, hey, there's a problem here that needs to be solved?
Yeah, it's a good question. So initially it had come out of my own experience and out of my co-founder's experience. So we had built a couple of companies before separately. And each time we had built our companies, we had realized that we were looking for a sense of camaraderie. We were looking for other startup CEOs to bounce ideas off of, to ask questions to share resources with. And we thought there's got to be a better way than each of us building it every single time we built a startup. And so we thought, why not create a community or create a platform where we can all come together and actually share like really, really tactical strategies so that we didn't have to rely on theory or the strategies that big corporations were using.
So how is this different than a mastermind, or is it a mastermind?
Yeah, so we offer masterminds, but we also offer many other things. So we have mastermind groups of 10 to 12, which is on the smaller side from what's offered externally, but we like to keep it really personalized and intimate. We offer one-on-one coaching. We have a network of industry experts. We do an annual pitch competition. And then on top of that, we also do a lot of assessments. So part of improvement is knowing where to improve. So we allow people to assess themselves in terms of their personal strengths and weaknesses, and also the strengths and weaknesses of their business. And that allows us to match them for them to improve, but also for us to match them with VCs that might be interested and value aligned with what their mission is.
So through all of this, I mean, we're in a atmosphere of change. There's no question about it. I mean, there's a lot of people that are, you know, moving company to company. There are people that are doing startups now because they have no choice.
Yeah.
They're decided, hey, you know, I gotta figure out a way to take my talent and make some money with it because nobody's gonna hire me. Or you could be like me, which I'm completely unemployable. I do not play well in a corporate sandbox. With that being said, what are you seeing today from the people that you've been working with that kind of makes you go, wow, this is something that is, you know, maybe unique to where we're at today? Is there some kind of trend or something that you're seeing?
Yeah, I mean, I think that I'm seeing, I don't know if it's unique, but it's certainly highlighting a belief that has been held in the startup world for a long time, which is that what you learn and what you do in the startup world is transferable to anything that you will ever do. So even if you build a company and it's not successful, everything that you learn can be used in your next venture. Or if you are building for like a venture, for example, and perhaps it is in the physical world and a global pandemic hits you, you can take everything that you have. Maybe it's a supply chain, maybe it's a particular skill, maybe it's a network that you have, and you can use that to solve a different problem. So I always tell people looking to get into entrepreneurship that people look at success in startups differently than they look at success or even failure in the external world. And I think that the pandemic and COVID in general has really illustrated that. Is that there is no failure really in startups, because the point of startups is to kind of pick yourself up and try again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I've been there and done that. I mean, I started a company a long time ago, had 5 employees, and got hit with a flood of raw sewage in a basement recording studio. And kind of put me out of business for 3 months. And it's like, you know, not quite a pandemic, but it kind of had the same twinge to it.
Yeah.
You know, it was definitely, you know, an issue. And so, you know, there were, while you're in the midst of that, you're going, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. But then, you know, years later, you start to come back and say, wow, I learned this. I'm not going to do that again, you know. And so there's a lot to be said about, you know, growing pains. It's just like going up to bat and swinging and missing. And it's like, what am I doing wrong? How do I hit the ball better? You know, those kind of things.
Yeah.
So what are some of the trends that you see that, you know, startups have a hard time with? Is it sales? Is it marketing, product development, leadership? You know, what are the things that you're seeing? And of course, you're going to say all of the above.
Of course, it is always all of the above. I mean, it's certainly every startup has all of the problems all of the time. I think it's just it's important for the startup founders to learn what to focus on and when. you can't tackle everything that you're having trouble with all the time. So some of our founders do have trouble with fundraising. Some of them really need a push in their marketing or their sales. And some, you know, haven't yet found product market fit or thought they had product market fit and are pivoting into something else. It's always something to tackle. But I would say that like the big themes would be like big problems that startups tend to face is either not talking to customers or not asking for help. And the first one really is something that you do at the beginning of your company, but then should really do throughout, right? Like you need to validate the problem. You need to actually talk to the people that you think have a problem and that you would want to sell to and make sure that they really do have that problem so that you don't spend time and energy and money building something that maybe nobody wants. And then the second would be not asking for help, which is common. Most startup founders feel like they have to do it on their own. Because we have these myths in our society about the single founder kind of conquering the world. But most founders and most leaders are leaders and strong leaders because they utilize their mentors and they utilize their community and they were willing to admit when they were struggling to other people and have those people rush in and kind of support them on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Having a, you know, again, that mastermind philosophy of being open to coaching, open to, you know, you've heard the phrase, you know, you never want to be the smartest person in the room because you're in the wrong room. Yes. You always want to try to surround yourself with people that can fill in some gaps or maybe see some blind spots or do some of those kind of things. Now, one of the questions that I have is, you know, in the balance between bootstrapping a startup and overspending, you know, in other words, there are people that try to advertise their way, you know, hey, I learned Facebook ads, man, I'm gonna, you know, pixel everything and, you know, it's working for all the e-commerce companies, I'm gonna make it happen, you know, so they spend their way into a black hole. Where do you see that balancing act and what do people need to know about that?
I would say that the choice between bootstrapping and fundraising is a question we get a lot, which is, do I raise funds? And most of the time people jump to, I'm going to raise funds. Who can I get funds from? I would say that like bootstrapping in many ways is a really, really smart choice. Not all businesses are venture businesses, and that is very okay. There are some fantastic businesses that didn't take venture funding. But part of the reason that bootstrapping, especially in the early stages, is really good is because you're spending money like it's yours, because in most of the cases, it is. And so you make smart choices and you make frugal choices and you try and find scrappy ways of getting things done. And you make the business successful that way. And then that infusion of cash later can be a way of accelerating growth, not standing in for growth. So you're not saying, oh, we're spending all of this money. Look at all that we've done. You're actually saying, these are the results that we've produced, not this is the process we took to get there.
Mm-hmm. So with the bootstrapping stage, mm-hmm. In the book, The E-Myth Revisited, there are three types of people. There is the technician, mm-hmm. there is the manager, and then there's the entrepreneur. The technician is where most people tend to bootstrap. It's like, oh, I can do this myself. You know, I can, you know, I know how to do video, so I'm going to do video. And I know how to, you know, do sales, so I'm going to do sales. And I think that people tend to, you know, kind of gear themselves towards that, where they overcommit doing so many things that they're not getting enough done. Mm-hmm. Managers tend to be people that, you know, are systems people. They want, you know, they want to move this here and this here and, you know, kind of put the system together and orchestrate. And they tend to be more introverted. And then you get the entrepreneur, which is the big picture person, which is, you know, I see this changing the world. It's going to, you know, revolutionize dog bowls, you know, something along that line. I've seen all three of these people. There's a product that I worked on, which was a $500 dog toy. And I'm going, yeah, no. it was really cool. It was featured on the news, you know, but it's like, who's going to pay $500 for a dog toy? Sure. So the question then becomes, you know, where do you see people having the biggest challenge? Is it they too entrepreneurial, or are they too technical, or do they sit there and try to create a system, but they don't have anybody to manage?
I mean, I think you can run into problems in all of those areas, right? Like if you're technical and you're trying to build something, then you may or may not have the sales sense or the customer minded focus to really get that product into the hands of the people who need it most. And if you're salesy and you're good at getting people to buy things, like maybe you're not really solving a problem or you haven't, you haven't built something that really solves the problem. And the entrepreneur, I mean, I've known several entrepreneurs who were so high level and so focused on kind of the vision that they kind of missed the 3 to 5 year plan that it would take to get to that place where that vision would be made a reality.
Yeah, I've seen entrepreneurs who are really good at the vision, but then they tend to hire the wrong people. You know, they hire a salesperson who's a really good salesperson, but can't sell their stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, they hire technical people that are really techie, but can't translate the vision into the product. You know, they're so busy, you know, wiring things. They're not thinking about UI or, you know, user interface or, you know, real world problems, you know, how to fix things in the field. You know, it's all of those things combined. Yeah. So with that being said, with this new kind of reality that's facing us right now, I mean, we're in a world where, you know, online ordering and services and supply chain and those kind of things are huge right now. Mm-hmm. What do you see, you know, in the upcoming year being some of the things that people are going to have to pay more attention to?
I think people are going to have to be more intentional about community and about connecting with people. I think that over the last, I would say, 6 to 8 months, we've been able to kind of run on previous connections and kind of like use previous connections to kind of connect us to other folks or kind of rely on some trust over the internet. But I think that there's going to come a point where that will run out, where you can't just rely on what we had when we were allowed to be in person and we were able to kind of run out to a networking event and meet some new people. And so we're going to have to put some systems or some tools in place to address that. And I'm super curious. I mean, it's been incredible to watch all the changes, the innovations, the efficiencies that have come through chaos and through crisis. So I'm curious and excited to see what will happen there as well.
One of the things I've heard about, you know, marketing and sales is that, a lot of people, you know, tend to focus on solving a problem without building some kind of a relational component to it, which I think is really important. And I think that, you know, if you can find a way to get people to, number one, you can relate to their problem and you can communicate that you understand their problem and that there's some kind of a relational component to it rather than transactional. I think that it's going to be more of that kind of world coming up because we've gotten so relational. We've gotten put into these cocoons because of, you know, COVID and social distancing and all these things. And then we've gone into these Zoom meetings. And what we're finding is, you know, we're finding different personalities that maybe you wouldn't see in person, or you know, you're finding different aspects about the human condition because of what's changed. Do you kind of see a sense of that to some degree, that there's going to have to be more relational type connections than just, you know, basically putting a problem out there and solving it?
Yeah. I mean, I think that there's there's a way in which that was always the case, right? Mm-hmm. Like nobody likes to be sold to. And if you don't really understand someone's problem, it's hard in the long term to really be successful in your business. But I do think that now that we are very virtual and very online, we have to figure out how to like trust people again. Mm-hmm. We have to figure out who to trust and how to know who to trust. Because we don't have all of the human cues or the feeling of a room or things like that to rely on. And so I think that that's definitely changing.
Yeah. And I think the biggest thing that people have to understand is, you know, change is happening fast, mm-hmm. but relationships aren't. Yeah. And I think that people are looking for that instant return when trust has to be earned. It's something that takes time. It's something that's a process. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really, you know, there's this fine line between, you know, get it done and nurture.
Absolutely. I think it was the three cups of tea philosophy that you have to have tea with someone three times before they're your friend. Mm-hmm. And I think that right now it's easy to be like, oh, I've met them once, so now they're part of my network, or I can call on them whenever. And for some people that's entirely possible. But I think for a lot of people, they need to see someone a few times, really get to know them, understand where they're coming from, understand what drives them to really feel comfortable and trusting.
Yeah, I've seen that happen in Zoom meetings and networking groups and things of that nature. Is you meet somebody in a Zoom room and then you have a one-on-one, and all of a sudden, you know, the next thing is like, hey, I want to do a follow-up call. By the way, I've gone through your LinkedIn connections and I think these would be good contacts for me. It's like, no.
Yeah, exactly.
That is not how it works. I am not a networking farm, mm-hmm. you know? And so I think that people who have tried to do that in the past, I think are going to have a much harder time.
Yeah, especially online.
Yes. So if you could rub your crystal ball right now, where do you see business changing over the course of the next, say, 6 to 9 months? I know, tough question.
Yeah, it's a big one. But I think that people will start to, with the introduction of the vaccines and the hope that the world will change or maybe go back to normal, I think people will begin to come out of panic or emergency mode and really start thinking about, all right, we've taken all of these risks. We've maybe pivoted. We've maybe left our job. Maybe we had to leave our job and start this company. What can we do with that kind of like crisis scrappiness with some hope that in 6 to 9 months, maybe a year, the world might return to some new normal?
Yeah, and I think that there's going to be some real world changes. I mean, think that, you know, commercial real estate will never be the same. Business Absolutely. Travel will never be the same. Mm-hmm. There are certain things, you know, even just leisure travel, you know, even though we have vaccines, I mean, flying to, you know, Bermuda where they may not be safe, you know. So I think,
sure,
I feel like it's going to take patience and it's going to take diligence and it's going to take time. I mean, it's mm-hmm. the best way to put it. It's going to take time. And I think that if people think that all of a sudden a vaccine's going to come and it's going to flip the switch and we're going to be back to 2019, I think they're mistaken.
Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm.
So this has been great and a lot of fun just kind of, you know, exploring the world and thinking about entrepreneurship. And I'm sure my audience is going to want to know more about you and your business. And what's the best way for them to get a hold of you or contact you?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if they're interested in Aspire 360, they can check us out on our website, www.aspire360.io. But if they're interested, please feel free to reach out to me at Eleanor@aspire360.io. I'm more than happy to chat, connect you with anyone that I can. Really excited to help out in any way.
That's awesome. And I'm sure you've got a lot of great resources at your fingertips too. So I'm sure you're a great connector and, you know, somebody who knows a lot of different people in different industries. So that would be awesome.
Thank you.
So, Eleanor, this has been great. Thank you so much for your time and coming on and dropping some sizzling hot predictive knowledge bombs on my peeps on what's coming down the pike, and also how to be a better entrepreneur, a better CEO, and all the things that you brought. It was a real pleasure getting to know you.
Thanks, Brian. It was a pleasure as well. I appreciate it.
Well, that's it for today's Bacon Podcast. We hope you enjoyed it and learned something today. If you did, please go to iTunes and give us a review. We appreciate all your feedback and comments. If you have any questions, go to www.baconpodcast.com/questions, and we'll make sure we get those answered for you. Till next time, keep sizzling.